What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast, where I'm your most humble and gracious host, HD. Had to get my little Joe Budden on real quick. But anyways, guys, y'all in for a treat today, man. We really got a celebrity on our hands. Had to mute the live stream real quick, but we are in for a treat today. She like a celebrity. Like, I seen her in the line of Afrotech, and I was like, hey, I think I said, aren't you IG famous or something like that? I'm going to ask her, do she remember what I said to her? Because I was like, the stars is really out here. But I'm about to bring up Miss Brene Washington, and we're going to put on a good show for y'all. Let's get it. Good afternoon. How you doing?
Hey, what's up? I'm doing good. How are you?
Man, I'm doing good. Let's see. Oh, yeah, everybody's in the chat. I appreciate y'all. If y'all in the chat, y'all know what to do. Go ahead, hit the like button, share it out so everybody can witness this. Let me get into, like, one of these icebreakers I said I was going to ask you. I got it up here, too, so it might be easier. Nah, it's some easy stuff. All right, so a rapper, R&B, and then after that, I actually do, like, your top five artists, no particular order.
Okay, I'm R&B all the way. Like, I'm a rapper, like, in the car, but if I'm, like, every day, it's definitely R&B.
Okay. Who would be, like, you know, your top five?
Easy. Tevin Campbell is number one. Like, if Can We Talk comes on, it's a wrap. Beyonce, of course. Like, I don't think you can even talk about R&B without Beyonce. Usher, I absolutely love Usher. Luther Vandross, and maybe Anita Baker or Toni Braxton. I don't know. It's hard. It's hard to pick five.
Yeah, you got a good mix, old school and new. For people that know me, they know it's gonna be Usher, The Dream, Eric Bellinger. For women, you know, I listen to music songs, like, sparingly, but not all the times because they not made for me, but they do be jamming. I don't know what woman I would throw in there. I'm gonna throw a curveball because I really do listen to, like, to a lot of his music, even though I didn't listen to his last album. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna say, because he made pop music too, but I'll say Justin Timberlake.
Okay, I did, like, I can't think of what the name of the last album was, but I did really like his, like, one of the last albums that he put out.
Yeah. And you know what? And only because 24K Magic, or whatever the name of that CD, made me a fan, I'm going to say Bruno. Bruno
be slapping. I have been trying to see him in concert. Like, I watched a video or, like, a documentary of one of his concerts, and it was so good. And every time I go to Vegas, whenever he's there, his shows are sold out. So I do want to catch him in concert one of these days.
Definitely. Yeah. I went to Vegas like a couple of weeks ago, like right before Afrotech, but I need to go back like one more time. I was on the old strip that I enjoy much more than the new strip. So.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I feel like I've been to Vegas so many times. Like, you just need two or three good days and get in and get out.
Yeah. We was there for what, like 4 days, but. See, in the gym, I put my treadmill on like 12 and I walk for like 30, 35 minutes. So the walking ain't bother me. Now, everybody else, they talking about their dogs was barking. Or they rode the wrong shoes. Like, I was like, man, see, I had just bought these real comfortable Cole Hans, or I had some New Balances I was walking in because I'm comfortable. You got them, they out there in Chelsea boots and stuff trying to walk. I'm like, nah, your feet going to be hurting slim.
Yeah, I'm over them cute days. It's definitely comfort over cute these days. Or exactly. Both. You can be both. You can have a balance.
Or you need to Uber. I mean, that's how kind of I put it.
Yeah.
So we got people in the chat, so shout out to all y'all. Let's really get into it. So who is Brene?
What a loaded question. So my name is Brene Washington. I like to say I'm like a creative kind of nerd a little bit. So I am an engineer by education. I got my engineering degree in 2012, and I've been working in like the IT space since then. But I've always found like I had this I needed to find a balance between like the creative person inside me and the nerd. And so on the other side, I'm like this influencer, like this really cool person that's passionate about fashion and style and just creativity. So I kind of got my hands in so many different jars at this point. I just say like I'm a free thinker.
All right, that's dope. So I read in your bio, you talk about like you were very good in math and science growing up. And I kind of want to ask you about that a little bit. Like science for me, I was like decent in it. But when it comes to math, I think I got pretty good at math, even going to schools that wasn't really teaching me the best. But like you, I kind of didn't really know about STEM per se. Like I had a computer, like things, all the other stuff, but coming from the South, that wasn't something they kind of pushed on us. Like even, I think later on, they had this thing called the Career Center where they showed people how to do certain things. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, in my city, it wasn't anybody that's doing like what we do now. It was like a different time. I tell people like, you know, 10, 15 years ago. So tell me a little bit about that. And then kind of how did that pique your interest to say, like, I guess going through like, you know, middle high school and then going to college, how did that make you want to get into STEM more, like as a career field?
Yeah. So I think when I was growing up, I was just a really good student and I felt like I was just supposed to be like, I was really kind of gifted, but I just thought that that was normal and everybody was good at math and science, or, you know, you just had to work hard to get better at it. So I didn't really think that I was a smart person, but people would always point it out to me. And at some point it was kind of a little embarrassing because I felt like separate from all my friends or kind of the people that I wanted to be amongst, just like being the cool person. But eventually I learned to love it. I really look back and I realized how good I was in math and science when I won a bike in like elementary school for having the highest math and science score in like the entire area. And at the time I didn't even know how to ride a bike, which shows you how uncool I was. But I think my teachers picked up on that and they always kind of pushed me to continue to love learning and to be in those gifted programs and really highlighted the fact that I just had a different ability when it came to math and science. So I didn't really know what that meant. Like I had no clue exactly what I could do with this skill until one of my teachers, when I got into junior high school, her name was Miss Sanford. And she started teaching me about like engineers. And, you know, we had this really good engineering school down the road from it was like an hour or hour and a half away from where I lived. And so that she would talk about that school to me and tell me like she thought I was really smart and how great of an opportunity it would be. So I never really thought anything of it, but I would repeat it to other people. Like when people asked me what I was going to do after high school or what I wanted to do with my life, I would be like, oh, I'm going to the University of Missouri Rolla. And people would just look at me like, are you for real? Like, are you that smart? Do you think you're that good to go there? And so from then I just had a chip on my shoulder and I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to that school, get my degree, and I'm going to prove like all these people wrong. And when I got there, I just built this community of people, like Black people that were really supportive and like we helped each other through. And it was, those are still some of the, like the, some of my best friends today.
Nice. And I actually want to touch on that, right? My mom used to always tell me that about like college. Like I remember being younger, my mom has these, it's like three or four friends that she met in college that she's still cool with to this day. Probably cooler than like people she went to like high school or whatever with. And I think the same way for me. Like I've met some people in those college years that I've just been rocking with the last, what, 10 plus years now. So I definitely agree with that. And I was really listening to you saying like people kind of was like doubting you or, you know, what you, you know, you think you're going to be going to make it or something like that. And I think a lot of us who went to school possibly dealt with that in some type of way. Either we were one of the people out of our pack to go all the way through and finish, or everybody back home didn't finish, or they just want to kind of look at you like a certain way. And, you know, probably like not really trying to be on that T Grizzly saying like they prayed on my downfall. But it do be a lot of people just waiting for you to say, yeah, I couldn't finish school. I'm just gonna come back here and get a job. Like, you know what I'm saying? It be people that want me there because they want everybody. It's like the crab in the bucket thing. They don't want, you know, somebody to win, you know. Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
But oh no, go ahead. I know you was about to say something.
No, I was gonna say I can totally relate to that. Like, even when I was going to school, when I first got there, I think there was so much competition amongst like just Black people, because I went to a PWI, and it's Sorry. Like, oh, there's only going to be one pretty Black girl on campus. It's only going to be one smart Black girl on campus. It's only going to be, you know, that one group or that select few that make it. And initially you start out kind of being in a competition, and like, everybody is the cream of the crop from their areas. And then you drop us all in one place. And now it's like, do we really got to compete for this? And eventually you will start to shift, like once you start be like excelling and growing and realizing that like, yeah, we need each other to survive. Like, we need each other. We're all going through the same thing. We have so much in common. And then it's like you start to really let that guard down and to help each other. And I think that was the real turning point for me and a lot of my friends, because you know, we wouldn't have survived without each other, and we wouldn't have survived with the competition. And now, as I've entered my career, that's the mindset that I have. So it's like there is way more space for more Black women and Black people, and just room to invite people and welcome them to the table, because we're so underrepresented, and it's just like life changing opportunities that we all should have access to.
Yep. And I was going to say, like, I went to a PWI too. I think amongst the guys, it was different. I think for me, I went to LA Tech, so shout out to Tech. Most of the Black people there knew each other, so I was like, it wasn't that many of us. So all of us pretty much kind of knew each other. I think the girls kind of had, you know, some tension between each other. But I mean, that's pretty much normal. They're either trying to get some dude or talk to some athlete. But for me, for the most part, it kind of was always just I think my personality has always led me to, for people like to gravitate to me, like kind of not for it to be issues. I can get along with anybody, but everybody can't get along with everybody. But I've always wanted to help people and see us win. And I think when I changed my major, once I got to undergrad, is when I figured out, like, you know, what I actually wanted to do. And then I said, hey, I want you in this major too. And then that's what kind of like some of my friends, how we became even closer. Cause we was all trying to figure out stuff in the same classes. And, you know, that's the same type of thing you do. If you translate it to the working world, like y'all got these projects due, or, you know, you got to get this stuff in this 2-week sprint, and you got to go reach out to all these people so y'all can work together and get the job done. So that's pretty cool. What was your, bachelor's in? Was it in cyber, or was it something like kind of like CIS or what was?
Yeah, so my degree is in engineering management, and I have an emphasis in management of technology. So when I started out, I was a mechanical engineer, and I just honestly, like, my school has so many different engineering disciplines that I really had no clue exactly what I wanted to do. I can remember calling my mom every day, like, I don't know what I want to do. And like, it's to the point where now I have to pick these major classes. And every time I change my major, it sets me back so much. So I have to really make a decision about what I want to do and, you know, map out the rest of my path in college. So I started out mechanical engineering, because a lot of my friends were mechanical, and it was just like one of the most broad fields that you could do a lot with. And then I had an internship with General Motors, and I hated it. Like, I was not able to like have this interaction with people. A lot of the people on my team, like my mentors and my leads, they were really old. They had done the same thing for so many years. And I just really felt like the personable person inside of me is not going to enjoy this full time as, you know, as my career. So after that internship, I went back to school and I changed my major to engineering management, because it was more like a space where you can kind of blend the business side and the technical engineering side. And so I could see a lot of the people that were in that space leaning more towards IT careers or IT sales and different things like that. But I wanted to stay close to the technology, so I got the emphasis in management of technology.
That's dope. Yeah, I did my master's in IT technology management because by that time I was already in cyber. So I was just like, I really don't have to go straight cyber. I need to take these other skills that I got and expand them because I know eventually in my field that's going to help me prepare myself. So anything with management always helps you stick out above somebody that has like kind of a regular master's or a bachelor's in like a certain discipline, unless that discipline really makes you a subject matter expert. So
yeah. And it was cool too, because originally it was only a master's program. And so probably about 3 or 4 years before I got to the school, they started offering it at the bachelor's level. So it was almost like you were balancing this like master's level courses, and there were executives and people that were coming back from their jobs to get their master's program in my classes. So I just had a different perspective. Like I had the technical side, like all the dynamics, mechanics of materials, the thermodynamics, all of that. But then I was really getting a good glimpse of like the real world in my business classes and my supply chain management and product development that I really, really enjoyed.
That's dope. So tell us like a little bit about like your early career. I know you said you've been in this thing about a decade. So, I mean, yeah. You know, gunshots for you. Tell us a little bit about that early career.
Yeah. So when I first started my career, I went to MasterCard and they were just kind of starting a internship pipeline. So they were still figuring out like, what do you do with not interns, but this like new hire and internship. So they were just figuring out like, what do you do with these new college hires? How do we kind of set them up for to perform and set them up for success? And previously they relied mostly on like contractor work. So they would hire contractors through these companies, keep them for a year or two. If they did well, then they would convert them to full-time employees. And that was basically how they were like qualifying everybody's skill set. So when I joined, it was an interesting space. I kind of got to figure out, I got to pick where I wanted to go because the program was so new. I was scared. I'm not even gonna lie. Like I was like, okay, did college really prepare me to go into this well-known financial tech company and like use my tech skills? Like, am I an engineer for real? So at first I was like, I don't know about that. So I went into the product management office. So I went in the global product management office and I was working on like fraud products. I was like, okay, I'm good. I can talk well. I'm good at documenting things. I like the financial aspect and I like to kind of keep track of everything and manage stuff. So I felt project management was going to be pretty easy for me. And it was like when I got there, it wasn't easy, but I had some really, really dope mentors. I started on this really big fraud project that was a global project. And it was basically like helping to secure the entire ecosystem from fraud, whether it be internal or external. And so I really got to learn the company a lot. I got to meet all the movers and shakers in the space. And my mentors really pushed me to take a lot of ownership. And so I was leading these meetings with these really senior people, these really senior systems solutions analysts and design teams. And I just kind of made a name for myself. So over time, I started to get more confidence in my technical ability. And I was like, you know what, maybe this is a little too soft for me. Like, I don't want to lose my technical kind of skill set. So I went over to a systems analyst role and I led this ETL platform where you basically kind of like move data around in a easier manner versus each team having to build their own structures and manage their data. So it was called the operational data integrator. And so I really got to do a lot of the technical work, the back end development, some of the ETL work, which is extract, transfer, and load. And I like really gained confidence in my technical side. After that, I spent about two years in each of these roles, maybe 2.5 at the most. And then I wanted to like, I feel like I had the soft skills down. I had the technical skills down and I really wanted to interact with people or like the front end and understand the customer aspect of things. So I got asked to change teams and move to a product development role where I was supporting this cybersecurity platform called MasterCard Identity Check, or Secure Code at the time. And basically it just like helped people, like helped verify that you are the right person that you say you are when you're shopping online. So like when you shop, you could be anybody. You can hit those buttons as long as you have the information and you can shop. But like in the digital space, really validating the person has ownership to those accounts with like biometrics and, you know, strong consumer authentication was something that we were trying to do, and we were innovating in that space. So I owned that platform for about 2.5 years. And then I decided, you know, I wanted to change. And that was around the time when it was during the pandemic and just the world was opening up. There were so many opportunities at other places. And so I decided to take my career to Amazon. And so because I was already in the cyberspace, I had had a lot of experience, probably about, I mean, I guess I had a lot of experience in the fraud space and the cybersecurity space already from my first earlier roles. And so I just transitioned to a role in identity and access management, which just kind of builds on top of that.
That's dope. I was here. I was trying to get my situation in the background good. No, but you said a lot without me even having that. I asked you for stuff. So this is very dope. And you gave them a lesson. In my LinkedIn course, I talk about visibility and like one of the ways how to get promoted. And it's like something my old manager at Goldman Sachs told me before he ended up kind of retiring like abruptly. But anyways, He was telling me, yeah, man, you got to get visible. Right. So, I was telling people like you said, you was leading these calls, you was leading these different meetings. So now everybody's like, hey, who is that girl? Like she's killing it. So that's like an easy way. Like it could be somebody that's not even on your team that just liked what you did, and they might just hit you up and they was like, man, I like them. I wish I could get them on my team. Like all those different things happens and help you get promoted, because a lot of people get mad like, dang, I got looked over again. I'm like, well, who knows you? We know you did your single work, but how have you shown, you know, upper management like what you bring to the table and how important is your team, what their team doing? Because see, that's another thing, is a lot of people don't even know what certain teams do. So if you can present at a quarterly all hands or a monthly all hands and kind of talk about the projects your team's working on or how important you guys do some things, and make your manager look good, make his manager look good, and make you look good. And so when they do that review, you didn't got your bonus. You probably didn't got you as much as they could when it comes to the merit increase. Like, you straight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's so important. Like, I didn't touch on a lot of those things I did in my career, but I also helped build out the new hire and the internship program after I learned what I learned and kind of steered my career in a good space. They were looking back and asking, like, how can we make it better? What would you have liked? What would you have done differently? And I did step up and take some leadership roles there. I was also really heavy in like recruiting, especially like diversity recruiting. I'm always the one volunteering to go back to make sure people that look like me got into the space that I was able to get into. I was doing those, you know, programs. Like I was joining Toastmasters to make sure when I got on those calls, I could speak well and I could represent myself and what I was doing really well. So I think all of those things made me more visible. Made me show that I can balance my day-to-day job, but also excel and give back and add value to the company at a different level. And it does make such a big difference. So I'm a huge advocate for like not just doing your job, but to also find ways that benefit you and the company that you can give back to.
Right. I totally agree. And here's a trick, like, guys, and that's why I tell people to do this. Start a YouTube channel. If you want to get better at like speaking, like start a YouTube channel. You can live stream like this. You can script out your videos and just get better and familiar and more comfortable with it. When I started this channel, I think close to about 2 years ago, my old company at the time saw what I was doing. And that led them to hit me up, say, hey, you want to speak on this panel for us with these, you know, these college kids, whatever. And so that's how the opportunity just started opening up. That's probably how, you know, I got, I spoke on some couple of webinars that people were doing to help people either get in tech, or we're just talking about like you know, how to get a bag or something in tech. And how I eventually, you know, led to me doing like my first LinkedIn course. It's like just putting yourself out there and getting better at your craft, your content, the value that you can bring, people being relatable. And a big key is like a lot of people who are like in tech, they want to appear like smarter than they are, or always want to appear smart instead of like trying to making their message being digestible. I'm sorry, for everyone. And that's a big one. Knowing your audience is so big. And if you know your audience, then you know how to communicate to everybody and you'll never have a problem in your career ever. But okay. So you said 2020 is when you decided to pretty much put that foot forward and, you know, get in cybersecurity, which I think is a lot of people. I think I know for me in 2020, I said, you know what? The pandemic is going to show everybody that how cybersecurity is needed. Because before 2020, I mean, you still was making, people still were making good money in cybersecurity. But when everybody started working from home, all the potential threats that was coming out on people's devices into the company, they was like, oh, nah, we got to pay these people some more. And we got to get the best talent we can get to pay them. And that's why even right now with, you know, it's so much going on. LinkedIn is kind of sad most of the days and then happy. I will say most of the time in most cybersecurity roles, if something is to happen to your current job situation, it won't last for long because so many companies will need you. So I'll leave it at that. But you already answered what made you get interested in cybersecurity. So let's do this. What's a typical day for a cybersecurity product manager that works with identity and access management? Let's talk about that because I kind of want to give these guys some gems real quick. Well, actually, you give them the gems.
Yeah. It's so funny because they're really like when you're in a space that is so fast paced and ever changing, there is no typical day. Now, I say that, you know, with the expectation that like, that's what I wanted. I wanted to be on the forefront of technology in the cutting edge space, but my job really does change day to day because like threats are changing all the time. We may have, you know, plan to go in one direction, but there are government regulations that change in different parts of the world that make you have to rethink solutions. There's some vulnerability that may have popped up, and now you have to really focus your attention to that thing and mitigating that risk because it's just like the top thing and the burning fire at that time. I guess on a day-to-day, like from a product management perspective, I'm really focused on the vision, like building out the strategy for what our ecosystem looks like in the next 1, 3, 5 years, because we have to stay ahead of the curve. But with that, there's this balance that's like, okay, you got to stay ahead, but you also have to address the problems that are here now. So always finding that balance, working with the threat detection teams to make sure I have the latest information that helps me feed into those roadmaps and those plans. I'm also working with like our risk teams to make sure that we are always like staying on top of the highest priorities and not losing sight of something that may have changed overnight. So I would say it's a lot of collaboration. It's a lot of learning. Like one thing that people think that I always try to tell them is like, yes, I have an engineering degree, but I will honestly tell you, I use nothing that I learned in engineering school in my day-to-day job. Like I am always learning. I'm always learning what the latest technology is, what the latest vulnerabilities are, and just kind of educating myself on the space so that I can make sure I'm building out the right plans for us to address those things. So day-to-day, I'm also working with my engineers. Like we have scrum teams because we're agile. And so once I kind of set the priority for my team and we distribute the work, I need to make sure that they have what they need to deliver that and that they don't have any blockers. So I'm meeting with them daily at touch points just to make sure they have what they need. There's nothing new that we need to adjust for and that our schedules and our timelines are on track based on the roadmaps that I build out. So it's a lot of stuff going on, but it's something that you really learn to love.
No, definitely. I mean, what you do sounds a little similar to what I do, but funner because you're actually dealing with like the threat teams and all the other stuff that I used to do. Like I used to be like part of like the threat team where the project manager was meeting with us trying to see, hey, what new correlation searches we got, how we looking on incidents, events, meeting with like cyber threat intel team. So that's cool. So the next question, I didn't have this written down, but I just looked at it. I said, I need to ask her this. So I noticed kind of the skills that would be need to kind of do your role a little bit, because I run into people, I have consultations with people all the time who tell me like what they do. And the first thing they always tell me is like, I don't have no cybersecurity experience. I'm like, and then I say, tell me what you do every day. And they tell me, I say, you got experience. Like, you just don't think it because your job don't say cyber.
Right.
But what would you say would be important skills if someone wanted to be a product manager working in cybersecurity? What would be some skills that they should, you know, really learn about in order to make themselves be attractive to any type of company to land a role like that?
Yeah, I think the most common thing that people like overlook that they have is just the ability to problem solve. Like, are you curious? Are you always diving deeper to find out why, or like chasing the real like root cause of something versus like somebody telling you this and you're like, okay, that's the answer. I think with cybersecurity, to be honest, like the most common threats are, they come from the most simple places, like, you know, phishing, hey, getting an email, like getting an email and clicking a link, or, you know, doing something so simple that we just take for granted every day. And people don't realize like how big of an impact that has on the security of things. So like, I think really just paying attention to the details, like really being somebody that wants to solve problems and not just looking at the surface of things. And then being able to articulate and communicate that. Like, I do a lot of writing. I have to convince a lot of people that I've done my due diligence to find the root cause or figure out what's going on. And I have to explain that to them. It's collaboration. Like, are you a team player? Do you have like negotiating skills to be able to get teams to really understand and buy into the vision that you have and get them to invest their time and their resources in delivering that? So those are all soft skills. Like, the technology is changing so fast. You can always learn that. Like I said, I'm still learning it. I'm always going to have to learn it because it's new. Like, cyber criminals find new ways and new holes and vulnerabilities every single day. There is no day that's going to be the same for me. And so I have to stay educating myself as well. So you can always learn that aspect of cybersecurity, but are you taking like mental cues about the other stuff that are so like such soft skills that people kind of count themselves out for having?
I totally agree. That's one of the reasons why I chose to always push to go into this field. Well, really anything tech related, it was the fact that I knew nothing would be the same from when I first started my career to now.
Yeah.
It's going to allow me to keep on learning. And most of the time in the role, if I get bored quick, that's when I know I need to go because yes. I'm going to turn into somebody who's not me. Like, I'm a naturally inquisitive person that wants to learn. And if I feel like a role can't offer me that, then I remove myself as fast as I can. And some people may not like that, but, you know, you have to understand, it's like, you could potentially try to wait that out and then try to go to a different role in like 12 months. However, how HR plays the game sometimes, they may say, okay, cool, we're going to move you. But you got to either one, wait till they backfill your role, or two, wait until you can actually go over there. So by the time you actually waited, you didn't spend a year and a half, almost 2 years sometimes in a role that was unfulfilling to you, that you lost skills in. That really probably will affect more than just your attitude at work, but also your attitude at home with everybody else. Because my attitude be down because I don't like what I do. I say it on every podcast. I do not like what I do. I swear to God, I don't.
And you really, like, it's hard work. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, we talk about, like, how there's a barrier, you know, there's a way to enter the space, and that I think many people are capable of doing it, but it is hard work. it's not always like the physical hard. It's mental, like mentally draining. There are a lot of really high priority deliverables. There's a lot of visibility. Like, you really have to know what you're talking about and be able to communicate that. Otherwise, it comes back and it's a reputation hit. And so if you're not happy, and if like you're not doing something that you're passionate about, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to be putting 110% or 1,000% forward. And it's going to show, and people are going to start recognizing that. And it's going to take a hit to your reputation and your performance. So I agree. I'm a total advocate for like leaving on a high, like do good work, prove that you're capable, but don't wait till you're starting to decline to start looking for something else. Like, I always want to leave a space where people can vouch for the good work that I've done. And I haven't reached the point of burnout to where I don't care anymore, which yeah. I'll never reach that point. But like, when you have long days and it's something that you're not passionate about, it's not the right team for you, it shows in your work.
Mm-hmm. It definitely shows. And sometimes people can't, a good manager can pry and get that out of you. They can actually yeah. say, like, for example, kind of a little bit of story time. When I was working at Goldman Sachs, I was pulled in to do incident management, which in so many terms is, if it's an incident with one of our vendors or within Goldman Sachs, I'm part of the team that we lead the incident from start to finish. I recognize the scope. I figure out what teams I need to involve. I do the write-ups for upper management, and I stay in constant contact with everybody throughout the day or whatever. However, as cool as that may sound to some, my skill set is doing that, but also being in the trenches. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to be the person that's going through the logs and looking at forensics evidence. And I used to do one-on-ones with my manager like every week. And he was like, you know, like the day 3 or something like that, day 5 when you was working, we figured out like you're way more technical than like anybody on our team. And like, should probably be on this team.
Yeah.
Like, he told me that out of his mouth, like verbatim. And listen, guys, this is, look, we're going live right now, right? I have a video. I have an unlistener right now, but I did make a video like, you know, why I left Goldman Sachs or whatever, right? And it was just it was a good video, but if I'm probably keep it a thou wow, I've actually had some regrets and said, you know what? A lot of the stuff some of the stuff couldn't have been changed because they were like really staunch on some of the things they wanted you to do. The biggest thing was for me was like going in the office 3 days a week, and I stayed far from downtown. That's probably like the biggest thing. If that wasn't for that, I probably would have stayed. But outside of that, of like in my role and stuff like that, I was just like, I probably could have got on the team with the manager that I really liked because he really liked me eventually. So I'm going to give y'all guys that transparency in another video to kind of show y'all like, this is stuff you deal with, you know. It ain't always greener on the other side, even if you're getting paid more. Like, the money. No. And I think that's one of the things too I love to talk about. Not like, I don't really glamorize tech in the way of saying, come on, do this so you can get all this money and blah, blah, right? I'm kind of realistic with it. But I also tell people, like, we were talking about earlier, just because you have the money don't mean you're going to be happy. So you could be getting paid almost $1 million and then hate what you're doing. And we see that all the time with rich people, like not being happy when having a lot of money. So it's not really the money. It's something, it's an intrinsic value that's going to make you happy about what you're doing on a day to day that will keep you happy versus you being unhappy, but making more money. And I think I either tweeted this or told a friend this. I was like, at my age of 30 now, I'm starting to see why like a lot of adults we had the encounters with was really not really mad at us, but mad that like they hated what they did or didn't have the courage to do something else. And they just was always angry and upset. And they took it out on like kids and whoever they encounter. And I was like, I don't want to be one of them adults because I'm doing something just because I got a family. I was like, no, I'm going to find something that pay me what I want and that I like to do to where I'm much more pleasant to be around.
Yeah. And it is. I mean, it's easier said than done. But I do tell people like there is this kind of glow around tech right now, and it's so interesting. Like, I don't knock anybody's but it's a lot of people that have not really been in tech for a very long time that give their perspective of it and kind of usher people in. And yes, take their, you know, you can take that, but also don't don't lose sight of the fact that nothing is free. You know what I mean? Nothing mm-hmm. is not going to come at a cost. And when I was 2 years into my career, I loved everything that I did. I loved everybody. I was so grateful to just have the opportunity and to be in the space because I had never experienced anything like that. I had never seen getting $30,000 bonuses and, you know what I mean? Like having community days where I can take off work or not having to punch a clock and do certain things. There are a lot of perks in the tech space. But you're going to work hard and you're going to have to be very competitive. And a lot of the things that you hear are only the rosy side. So make sure you do your research and you fully understand this shift that you're making because it's not going to be easy. It's possible, but it's not going to be easy. And to stay there and be successful is going to require work. So if you're not passionate about that space, there are other things that you can make six figures in and be happy about it. Like this is just one that people have kind of recently discovered. But I know a lot of people, I have a lot of friends that make six figures and they're not in tech and they are mm-hmm. happier. They have a little more flexibility than I have. They have just different perks about their job that is authentic to who they are.
Definitely. I'm glad you said all of that. Because one of my last episodes, I was just talking about how people was using this little voice with the day in the life. Okay, y'all. So I went to Starbucks and I got my favorite coffee today. And I worked from Starbucks. I did a little work. Then I went and got my toes done. And I went shopping. Like these people for the last 2 years been doing all this BS on TikTok. And it caught up to a lot of them. Like if you don't think your employer got TikTok and they ain't trying to see who worked for who and seeing what they doing. Just like we seen people, I think it was a younger girl either working for Deloitte or something like that. She had to take her video down. One girl got fired or something like that for sharing her salary, which I don't agree with. But at the same time, I've also been an advocate of like stop oversharing like on social media so much. Like I'm talking about you even had people, the dumbest stuff ever is when people stopped gatekeeping, they was working multiple jobs. Yeah. I'm like, your job ain't even supposed to know you working multiple jobs. Like don't tell nobody. I don't know if people ever seen the Wayans brothers. Don't tell nobody. Tell nobody.
And I'm all for salary transparency within reason. I don't want to give people this like false hope that, oh, you can transition to tech in 6 months and make what I make. Like I literally did not start making six figures. I don't think anybody that like transitions initially into tech is going to be making six figures right out the gate. Now, once you get a tech job, once you get one to three years of experience and you start shopping around because you have the right skills, you can get whatever you want if you have the right negotiating skills. I just think that, you know, tell it for the right reasons. Like if we're trying to tell those things to even the playing field so that people know what to ask or people know what the going rate for that skill is, or if they want to up level their skills and get into this space mm-hmm. and what kind of salary they can expect. I think that's great. But if it's just to say, oh, I make all this money and I can do all this and painting this unrealistic picture, it's not the right reason to share.
Most definitely. And we saw that from a lot of people on Twitter and TikTok over the past 2 years. And some people was caught up with, and I think some people realize like I'm kind of doing the most. Let me relax and just ball in silence. Like for me, I tell people all the time, like I know people, I got a YouTube channel, this and that, but I'm not flashy and I probably won't ever be flashy. Like the people that know me, I probably say, hey, look what I just got or this, or like if somebody close to me, I'll show my clients some stuff sometimes, far as just motivational purposes, saying like, hey, people talking about multiple jobs, but Credit Karma reached out and they were trying to pay this just for one position. Yeah. Like I show them that just off the strength of just motivation, but not off of, hey, you a peon. Like I just made a post on Twitter. Like Twitter is the only place that'll make somebody feel like 120K, 130K salary ain't no money. When I was like, the math tells us that it is. That's an above average salary. Most people probably make 40.
I think the average income is like 30, 32 or something like that. And that's not even taken into consideration where you live. Like, exactly. And then the taxes, it's like, yes, the money is great. It's good, but taxes are real. Right.
And exactly. and that's a whole other conversation, which I don't think ever will be fixed. It's the reason why so many people with high earning careers get side hustles and businesses, because it's like, I got to figure out a way to keep some of this money, because I pay what some people get paid in taxes. And that money could be going to my kids, or let me choose where it need to go to, because certainly it ain't going to canceling my loans.
Right. Yeah. So I just think, you know, I'm not knocking anybody's hustle. I just think when you're consuming information, you just have to be a little more diligent about the sources and the credibility, because it's just like YouTube. Like, anybody can be a guru or an expert on YouTube. It doesn't mean the information is accurate. And so that goes back to even like what I was saying about a tech career. It's like, I could go to YouTube and listen to a video and I'm like, okay, this is how you do X, Y, Z. But do I have, I shouldn't take that at face value. I need to also look deeper and really validate that what that person is saying makes sense versus all these other sources and all the other information that I've collected. Like, that's the skill that you need, not just listening to a podcast or something like that and saying, okay, because so-and-so said it and they got a tech job, that this is real. Like, put all of your information together and then you make a knowledgeable decision about that. And those are the skills that you need to be successful in the tech space.
Most definitely. And I'm going to leave it on this last note and then I'm going to get to the next question. I was saying, I compared everything I've seen transpire over the last 2 years. It had a lot of resemblance to network marketing. Network marketing preys on emotions, feeds you a whole bunch of BS, gasses you up, and then takes your money and then you done turned into somebody recruiting people. You know what I'm saying? Getting hit up by somebody you ain't talked to since high school. Hey, man, want to start a business? Bro, that's not how business works. People don't just go up to people and ask them, do they want to start a business? You're an independent contractor selling stuff that nobody wants. But I want to ask you this, though. What's been your experience being a Black woman in tech, and what type of advice would you give women pursuing, you know, a career path in tech?
Yeah, I'll say initially when I became a Black woman in tech, I kind of had these rose-colored glasses. When I first went to my first job, I didn't get any like level of discrimination because I was a Black woman. At least I didn't feel that. I think I got the most pushback because I was young and like the space was just so much older than me. And it's like these older white men that just kind of were the authority. And so, I mean, it could have been some perspective of me being Black. It could have been some perspective of me being a woman and then being a young woman that all kind of, you know, hit like that all kind of came together and made it a little more challenging for me. But I didn't feel it initially. I will say as I get older or more tenured in my career, I have to be really intentional about how I show up. Because I think there is so much just unconscious bias from people about, you know, if you stand up too strongly, then you'll be an angry Black woman. If you get, you know, if you are arguing your point, you know, you might be looked at as combative or aggressive. I have that thing in my mind that tells me like, okay, you got to watch this, but also other people have that. And I'm slowly shedding that space where I need to tailor myself to make sure that they don't get that perception from me because I'm more comfortable in my space. So I'm also showing up like just as my authentic self. Like I build products, and when I worked at MasterCard, like women held the purse strings basically. So most of the spending is being done by women in the household. And there was this huge gap of women designing products that women are going to use. So we saw like products that were not well designed or that weren't the best for the market because there was not a woman at the table making those decisions. So when I took that role, I'm like, I need to design for a Black woman. Like, what is my mom going to want when I grow up and I have to do certain things from a financial perspective? What do I need in a product from a Black woman's perspective to make this easier and inclusive for everybody? So now that I understand the power that I have in the space, I don't dumb it down. Like, I don't go in with my nails done special. I don't go in with my hair pulled back or straightened all the time. I'm showing up as a Black woman. I'm not changing my voice. I'm not code switching. And I think we have to make people respect us and respect our perspectives and respect our culture and authenticity by not dumbing ourselves down. So hopefully I answered that question.
No, you nailed it. You know what I'm saying? You really did. And that's why, like, so, and I'm glad, like, it's been a inception of more Black women in the job space. Because before, well, see, when I did Help Desk, and Help Desk is probably one of the only jobs you'll see with, like, a lot of Black people, because it's a lower level role in terms of the company, but it's an important role. It just doesn't get the pay it should.
Yeah.
But
it's one of the most, yeah, for sure.
Right. Outside of that, as I started moving up, I rarely worked with, like, Black women, like, especially like when I was like, I used to do sock work. So it's really Black people in a sock. But in my last company, well, company before that, Optiv, we had some Black people there. Actually, my director, he's Black. And one of my coworkers at the time, she was Black. And I used to always make sure, like, I could help her out any way I could, because they would be unfair to her sometimes, because, you know, they tried to just BS her work, or the people are not, like, listening to her when she said, hey, I need access to this. So, like, I would, like, always vouch for her and, like, send emails if I had to, just because, just, you know, you need that in the environment, like, somebody actually, like, to help and, like, you know, look out for you, because I was a high performer there. So it's like,
yeah,
you're gonna pay attention when this email come across. Like, I don't like nobody being done wrong, especially when I know they're more than capable, and the person that's, like, BSing them is, like, on their bull.
Yeah. And I do think, you know, you as women in a room, I've seen this with other women, you kind of get talked over. Like, you might say one thing and put your thoughts on the table, and then a man says the same thing, and it's like, oh yeah, that's great. And as a Black woman, I think that we just are naturally known to, like, take the reins and lead things, but we don't always get the credit for the work that we've done. So I do see, like, when you shift careers, one thing you have to be cautious of is that you don't bring that same reputation with you. You have to set the expectation when you start, and you have to make people respect you. And that is one of the reasons why I'm always learning, why I'm always, you know, continuing to make sure, like, I know my shit, because if I say one wrong thing, it's perceived totally different versus somebody else that may be new to the space and they say something wrong. Like, unfortunately, we have to be accurate most of the time, because one little thing changes someone's perspective of what you know, because sometimes it's not always just the benefit of the doubt that we know what we're doing. And so I know a lot of people say shift jobs and shift careers, change companies to grow faster. And I totally agree with that. I think it's a great option, but you do always have to have in the back of your mind, it's like, you're starting from scratch. You don't get that reputation that you've invested in and that you've built. You have to go in and know your shit and, you know, carry your legacy on your back.
Definitely. And I'll also say the only way that can work for you is, a lot of people job hopping get more money, but sometimes they not job hopping up, they job hopping laterally. So you want to be strategic about that and just do good work overall. Like I was telling somebody, hey, just do good work. You never know who, like an old manager or director, if they become a director somewhere, you know, you want to go to that company. If you did good work, they can remember you, and they'll like have no problem co-signing you to a hiring manager or something like that. So that's pretty cool. All right. I got some more questions for you so we can knock these out. What's one thing about your job field or of expertise that almost no one agrees with you about?
That there is a balance between being proactive and reactive. I think in the cybersecurity space in general, a lot of it is built on being proactive or being reactive and addressing the risks that come up and giving those your undivided attention. And I think that's great, but I think there is more room to have a more proactive kind of thought process. And especially from a product manager who is responsible for building out visions. I think some things you can see are trends, like, you know, the phishing and the vishing. It's like phishing came from emails, and then people don't use emails as much. They use text messages or they use their voicemail. And, you know, it's just like there are vulnerabilities that get exposed, but they typically also tend to follow a trend. And so if you can be both, like have a good balance between being proactive and reactive, I think, you know, we'll have a better opportunity to be ahead of the curve versus always like waiting until a fraudster figures something out. And it's hard. Like, I know that it's hard to find that balance, but I wish companies would take a different perspective. And a lot of my colleagues don't agree because they're like, well, we don't know until we know. But I think that, you know, there is a level of planning to a more proactive way that we can do.
Dope, dope. Like Nick Cannon said on Drumline, stay ahead of the game.
Yeah.
This is a fun one. People love this question. How would your parents describe what you do for a living?
Oh my gosh. Let me tell you, my mom is like my case study because like she's the person that still has her like email password in her phone case. And I'm like, you can't do that. But I think my mom would know more about my career in MasterCard because I did a lot of outreach and a lot of interviews and stuff like that. But to be honest, she'll just be like, you're an engineer. Like, she'll just tell everybody that I'm an engineer. And honestly, I do more like IT work than any like engineering space. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she would just say, oh, she an engineer. And that's probably about it because she's not going too deep into it.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think my dad knows. My dad just thinks I travel all the time. He's like, yeah, you just around the world, ain't you? Like, he probably thinks I'm a travel agent or something.
That's funny. All right. It's a good one too. What are some underrated tools that are indispensable for your job?
I don't know. At Amazon, we have a lot of built-in tools. Like, we build everything. I would say, learning tools, like something that, like, we use Lynda and LinkedIn Learning and all that. I think those, like, having product talks and different things like that to reference to stay above the curve. I would say things like Visio to build our roadmaps, although we have our own flavor of that stuff. But as far as like building out a roadmap and making sure that like people can easily read those things and help you understand where you're going, those visual representations help. We use a tool called SIM. Most people use Jira. Like, I don't think we could do work without a tool like that just to handle the process of how we develop work. And then like Chime. Chime is an Amazon tool that it's like the voice conference, like Skype and different things like that. That's helpful. And we do a lot of video conferences because we are remote and it is different. Like, not like just talking to somebody on the phone or not understanding those social cues about a person can be harder, make it harder to get up to speed. So having those video conferences and being able to like see a person face to face, read their facial expressions when you say something, or, you know, when you're talking about a touchy subject, can really help you build those relationships. So I would say all those things.
That's dope. Yeah, I've used Chime before. I mean, it was for a one-off interview, but I still used it before. So I got some good questions for you now. So what made you want to mix STEM and fashion together? What made you, you know, what made you want to be that influencer gal, GYL?
I think it was just being true to myself. Like, I love the STEM side, but I will be honest, it can get rigid, it can get stressful, mm-hmm. It can get really overwhelming. And so I needed an outlet, and I needed like something that was still authentic to who I was, but wasn't always talking about like something I had to do all the time or how I, right, you know, just use one part of myself, which is my brain. And fashion has always been something that I've enjoyed. It lets me be like really free and creative and just a chameleon. Like, I feel like I can always change and be something different, but still true to who I am. And so I think it was like the best of both worlds because I like being this powerhouse when I'm working, But I also like being more free and creative and expressive when I'm not doing my day-to-day job. And so it just gives me a really good balance.
That's dope. It's dope. Yeah, man. Because everybody who don't know, like, she really is, like, famous.
Like, I am not.
she's about to be famous. She already get some good sponsorships and stuff from companies to do stuff for them. Could you actually talk about that in a sense? And you don't have to go deep about what you make from that or whatever.
Yeah.
And maybe I also should have asked you this. I'd be like, it'd be a toss-up for me asking this, but I forgot to ask you something as far as if we was to talk about entry-level cybersecurity product managers, which I would possibly don't really exist. It's hard to really be entry-level anything in cybersecurity. I would assume somebody who's an entry-level cybersecurity product manager has been doing product management elsewhere in their career. So technically, they're not really entry-level. Yeah. But could you give people a realistic idea of like what salaries they could expect, give or take, whether it's, you know, a FANG company or just a normal company?
Yeah. So I always break it down like two ways. So I started out as a project manager, and there are different levels to it. So I could have been a basic project manager, and I just handled like the administrative stuff, which is still a great career path. Or you can go and be a technical project manager and a technical product manager and a basic product manager. There's always going to be a differentiation in salary when you up-level your skills and you add a different layer to a role. So like an entry-level project manager, I would say, would probably make $60,000 maybe. Depending on what skills. And when I say entry-level, it's not like you don't have any leadership or management skills. You may not have specific project management work history, but you still have skills where you've led different teams. You might have been the project manager for your sorority's project or something big, and have years of experience kind of leading organizations, leading something from start to finish, keeping the budget on track, and managing like leadership stakeholder communications. That does not have to be in the workspace. So if you are just like switching over to an entry-level project management role that's not technical, I would say about $50,000 to $60,000 is reasonable. If you are a technical, like on the technical side, I do think it's a little more challenging to switch to a technical role from an entry level. You're just going to have to show a different level of technical acumen because it's going to be really influential to the role. But if you switch over for entry level technical product manager position, I would say probably around 70 to 80,000 for entry level. And it just grows from there. Like once you get maybe 3 to 5 years experience, sometimes even 2 is enough. But most positions want you to have 3 before you can kind of climb to like a senior level or something else. Then that's when you start getting into like the 100,000s. And it depends on like what type of like how deep you're going to go. I think it is interesting because from a, like if you're talking FANG versus a non-FANG company, I think some FANG companies get away with like their reputation and they'll give you more equity versus the pay. Like I know Amazon was like that initially, like they had a salary cap and they would like really hook you in with their equity, which is like your stock bonuses that you can get. So I think the base for everybody was like 160 initially, and that's since changed. But they would throw you like $150,000 in equity or $200,000 in equity. And it's like, okay, you put that all together, you're making like $300,000 projected. So I think FANG companies have gotten away with doing that more.
Right.
But there are some like Google who pay really well, but you'll see that for more of the technical roles that you're going to be able to ask for more money.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you, you know, just since I think you're probably the first, no, you're the second FANG Amazon person I've had on here. And I forgot to ask them this in a while back because that was before I wrote questions down. What those sign-ons look like from time to time? I know they'd be crazy.
So it is crazy. Like Amazon gets you in like a 4-year structure. So they'll give you like your base salary and then they will give you a crazy sign-on bonus. So I think my sign-on bonus for the first year was like $95,000 and for the second year it was like $72,000. So that keeps you for 2 years. So that's like $150,000 just on top of my base salary. Mm-hmm. And then you get your base salary. And then the last 2 years, so their packages are built for you kind of to stay 4 years. So the last 2 years, you'll get most of the equity that you've negotiated or that you came in on. So they really feel like, you know, we're building long-term strategies. We want people that are invested, that are going to put their best foot forward for the long right. haul. And so if we give them just the money up front, like money isn't important to us. If they're performing, the equity is going to go up and, you know, the company is going to do better. The stock is going to be higher. They're more invested in doing well across the 4 years because their money could go up. And so you'll see, like, I think for my stock, like 5% hit the first year and I got the big sign-on bonus. Then the third year, it's like 10% hits and you get a smaller sign-on bonus. Then the third year, it's like 40% of my stock hit and I get no sign-on bonus. And then fourth year, it's all stock and no sign-on bonus. But it's like, I want to do well because I might have got 70 units, but the price of that changes based on how well the company is doing.
Got you. That's dope. And I'm glad you answered that. And now we got to pivot back into the schedule programming. I got like two questions to ask you, but I want to ask you this one right now. It's kind of like, what made you want to start the Steam Queens?
Yeah. So I started the Steam. So the Steam Queens is a lifestyle brand for kids that helps them, that teaches them about science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. Again, you'll see like the central theme about arts being included because I am really passionate about the arts and I think it makes me like more well-rounded to have an emphasis on the creative side as well. So a lot of people will leave out the arts, but I really think that makes people a lot more marketable when arts is added. So the Steam Queens kind of teaches kids about the importance of those things and just introduces it to them at an earlier age so they don't have to stumble into careers with the emphasis on those different concepts. So I started it in 2018 and it started from a children's book. And what made me start it was because I was doing so much community outreach at my company and I started to see that the demographic for what underrepresented looked like was like shifting from Black girls or Black boys to just girls, or to that it was being more streamlined. And I just felt like if I didn't have somebody to reach out to me, you know, at those critical times in my life, I would not be where I am today. So I wanted the conversation to be about Black girls and underrepresented communities. And now I've extended it to, you know, Black boys, because we don't really put the focus on them doing those type of things or them learning about career paths that can change their lives. And we see a lot of our Black boys kind of get pushed into other things like sports or, you know, just different things like that. And so I felel like the Steam Queens was my way of making sure that I didn't get in this position in life and didn't do my part or leave, you know, made sure that those kids had an example to see and something that could guide them in the right direction. So right now we're rebranding the Steam Queens. The new brand is going to be called Futuristic Steam. And the purpose of that is so that it is more inclusive to Black and Brown girls and boys, because I think right now Black boys are just, it's a really tough time for Black boys, which has always been. And I don't see the emphasis put on them in those spaces. And so I want to make sure I don't exclude them.
Yeah, you're definitely right. Kind of one of the reasons why I started this. And, you know, let me give you this real quick.
Put some respect on my name. Y'all said my name, put some respect on it.
Aw, Tria. Yeah.
Had to give you that Birdman for that, because that's pretty dope. And you're right, they really don't cater to boys. And sometimes I do keep my opinions to myself, and I'd be like, I'd be seeing people. I don't really use my Facebook, but I go back on it just see what they talk about from time to time.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, if y'all put this much emphasis on these dudes, like, getting to, like, an actual STEM career, they'd be much better off, because they only got a small percentage of them that's going to actually make it. Y'all put all this money and time into doing all this training for them to, unfortunately, if they don't make it, be a depressed ex-athlete, because all they thought about was that. It's a lot of dudes that struggle with when they put their rock down. They don't know what to do. All they've been taught was they can do this. And, you know, that is really, you know, bad for the mental, and they make bad decisions and they just become, you know, a regular person. And then some of them try to live their dreams out through their kids, whatever. It's like, man, you could do a lot. Cause I always, and this is a hot take, but I'm pretty sure it's not uncommon, but if you listen to most athletes speak after they played a game or something like that, you can tell their parents, it's only some of them, but you can tell their parents did not work with them on articulating, reading books. Like, it's if they're going to do all that stuff, at least say, hey, read me a book a week, something. So when they get on the podium, they not just sound like they just some dumb jock. Like,
yeah. You know. And it, I mean, the reality is that give them options, you know, like the likelihood of somebody growing up to be in a professional athlete or professional rapper is very slim. And even if you get, you work hard enough to maybe go to college and get your college paid for, because your athletic ability, the likelihood to go to the next level is really small. And so, like you said, it is kind of devastating when that's all you've been all your life and people have only valued you for, you know, how you can perform. When you maybe run into injury or you run into somebody that's younger and better, because like we're just cranking them out like it's a factory. But, you know, yes, be great at basketball if that's your passion, be great at football if that's your passion, baseball, golf, whatever you want to do. But exposing them to more opportunities and more options than just that is our responsibility. And I would love to see Black boys that are valued for their minds and the creativity that they have and their artwork and all the many other facets that Black men are amazing at than just their ability to perform in a certain way.
Right. But, you know, that's a whole other conversation of what type of men women like and vice versa. And that'll be for another live stream. But let's ask some of these bonus questions. Well, for me, one of the bonus questions I had was, let's talk about Afrotech real quick. How was Afrotech for you?
Afrotech was really amazing. I'm so happy I was there in person. Like, I've done the virtual ones before with COVID and everything. And it's nice, but it's just nothing like being in the room with Black people that understand what you're going through, that are looking, you know, for, you know, help up in their careers or that can help you up. And it's just all love. Mm-hmm. Like, I think one of the central things that we can say is that, like, everybody was just so genuine and so nice and so complimentary. Like, you know, everybody's like, girl, your outfit is cute, your hair is cute, you looking good, what you do. Like, it's just the space that you don't see a lot. And for me, it was like, it was a recharge. Like, this is a really rough time of year for people that are in tech. Like, this season is crazy. You know, we're planning out the year, we're wrapping up big projects, we're balancing budgets. Right now, there's this layoff space looming in, you know, in the tech space. We may not be impacted, but our friends are. And it's just something that sits in the back of your mind. So to have all of that going
jobs
on.
Jobs put on hold. You can't even leave your company.
Right. Even transfer internally. You know, everybody is just in such a different space right now. It was just good to come together and celebrate us in the space that we dedicate so much time to.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I was like, nobody was mean or nothing like that. It was like, everybody's nice, especially the women. Normally, if you're not at an event like that, you know, women always got kind of like the RBF face on. Like, Nobody's trying to bother you, but everybody's so nice. Like, get to ask, hey, what do you do? I'm just sitting there with somebody. Oh, I do this with that, or we do this for our cause for to get bills passed for a legislator in Austin. Like, I've met so many different people who were just happy to tell me about, you know, what they do, and then vice versa. And I think, of course, you met a fan. I met you. I ran into people who I've helped in consultations. I ran into subscribers. Like I was telling people in my video, my Uber driver one day was a sub of mine. Like, it was just kind of like crazy. And it's like, you know, for me being on a small scale is like one of the things that's like has motivated me to like to keep going. The fact that, you know, no matter everywhere you go, I mean, that's why I tell people YouTube is better than TikTok, better than Instagram, everything else because of the reach. TikTok of them is good for short form content, but whatever video that was a while back with the girl who had all these TikTok subscribers or whatever, and she did this meet and greet, nobody came. TikTok of them does not build that relationship.
Community,
that YouTube builds. Like, YouTube people have been watching me for 2 years now. So they remember that first thumbnail I made, that first video I made on my old phone, the front facing camera. They remember that. They've seen, okay, yeah, you was doing this, now you did. They've been with me through like this latter part of my career right now. And or the people I've also helped privately, you know, with my company. And those are some of the things that kind of keep me going. So to see that, see all the energy. Like I tell people, I didn't even drink no energy drinks at Afrotech. I had so much juice just from being energized, from being around people like the whole time. Like, I mean, I did stay out to like 3. Whatever that Render ATL joint. I went to that joint. What was that, Tuesday night? I think it got out like 2. I was like, man, what am I thinking? I'm not young no more. Like, I got up the next day. Everybody's like, I see your bags under your eyes. I was like,
Auntie gotta sit down. I was tired, but I mean, we still made it to everything, and we got up in the morning because of the energy, you know. Right. And you didn't want to miss anything because you never know what the moment is gonna be. Definitely. So yeah.
And it's going to be back in, I think, Austin next year. So I'm going to book early again so I can get me a good room again for the low. Whether the company pays for it, I pay for it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go to these. We had a couple of questions from the audience, and then I'll go into like these last 3 questions I got from you. Okay. So let me see. Where is this first one at? I think it was this one. Mind Body Swole asks, does the jobs provide security clearances, or do you have to go out and get it on your own? No, most companies will buy the clearance for you, or you can go to the military and they will get you a clearance, but you can't just go out and get a clearance on your own. You have to probably go through like a company that can get it for you. But if they, like, sometimes, like for me, I got my clearance through help desk, and the company paid for that. I forgot how much they even cost, but it does cost them a lot of money. So they got to re-up their money some type of way. But once you have it, I believe it's good for like 10 years. Mine isn't active right now, but if it had to be reactivated, I believe it could be fairly easily. Let's see. We have some more. Okay. So King318 said, is the Google Project Management Certification a good way to get into the field? I'll leave that one for you.
Yes. So I think there are 2 paths to get into the field. Like, there's this traditional way. If you have a degree, you know, that's always going to be looked at highly. But if you don't have a degree, the next best thing is certifications. And when you're talking about companies like Google or IBM or, you know, Udemy, those are industry leaders, even LinkedIn. So if you have done your due diligence to get a certification that is on your own, something from a credible source that you probably went out and paid for on your own, or it was self-guided and self-paced, which means you had to really be dedicated to completing that. Nobody was telling you needed it for your job to keep getting paid. To me, all of those things combined make a difference. And so anytime that you can add like a certification or like a stamp on yourself and your ability from a known source, it's always helpful. So I would say stick with the more notable brands like the Googles, like the IBM, the Udemy, credible programs. And a lot of them are free. So don't, you know, there are people that can kind of mentor you and may charge you for that, but there are a lot of resources that are free. And I think they still hold the same weight, especially if they come from companies like a Google.
Yeah, I think he was saying, he followed up saying he knows someone who got in, cannot find a job. And I'll add on 9 times out of 10, because some people get the cert and stop there. I tell people, whatever job you want, those job descriptions, all the study guides, they literally tell you what skills you need to learn how to do. So you can study those to figure out what you want to do. You can also reach out, like she said, to professionals. I tell people all the time, hey, if you want to learn about the certain role, put this role in quotes in the LinkedIn search bar. Find people who do the role. Send them a nice little connection note and ask them. Everybody not going to answer, but some will reply and they'll tell you exactly what you possibly need to do. And you never know, if you build a relationship with that person, they might be able to refer you to a role at their company. And that's the biggest thing. It's like networking. Like,
yeah.
Unfortunately for us, we don't own a lot of these companies, so it's hard to get in. So you have to network. And I've been doing that lately, and I will show people some more in the coming weeks about how to network a little bit more effectively on LinkedIn if you're trying to get a certain referral for a company or trying to like just land a new role and get that interview, because it's tough. Everybody's out here competing. You got to figure out a way to get in. So like you were talking about earlier about how your take about cybersecurity is like this kind of like too reactive instead of proactive. That's what I teach my clients in my book. It's like, hey, it's, you know, you complain about nobody like calling you back. Are you being reactive or proactive? You're going to be reactive. Sure. They may be, your resume probably in parts, right? Maybe they didn't really, maybe you didn't have it laid out in a way they really understand what your skill set is. How about you go network with their recruiter or that hiring manager and talk to them and see if they can pull your stuff and talk to you themselves.
And that's the thing. It's not only about like having that certification on your resume is going to take up probably 4 words. You have to also be able to communicate that you can do the skills that go along with that. That certification. So when you write out your resume, you need to write it out. You need to make sure you're writing it out in a way that says, I own these pieces that contributed to X amount of growth or X amount of savings. Like, it's like tech companies are very metric driven. So you need to prove and quantify the value that you've added. So there are words, like keywords, that go along with certification and go along with project or product management that you need to make sure you're using, and you're using those words. So you're using those words to demonstrate and amplify the knowledge that you have in that space. And then I always tell people, like, we get really hung up on having work experience in those spaces. Like, go out and start your own project and be the project manager to lead it from start to finish. And then you have experience to talk about in an interview. Nobody cares if it was a big company or a small company. If you led a church, like a church, you know, Christmas program, and you demonstrated all the skills that you need to do to lead that program end to end and to solve problems and to look ahead and find risk and different things like that. Talk about that, because you're not always going to have experience every role. I don't have experience in that space, but I have enough knowledge. I've done enough research to be able to talk about where my gaps are and how I'm going to address those. But I can tell them what I do know. So,
right.
Go further, like dive deeper. The cert is the first step.
Facts. And I was also going to add in something like, shoot, hey, you go to, like, she brought up church. I'm like, hey, man, help the church do a project and show the church how they can take tithes online and drive that thing from start to finish. There you go. That's an implementation project, too.
Yes.
We got another question from Henry Phillips. He says, around what point in your career did you begin your YouTube social presence as an IT ambassador, entry, mid, senior level? So I don't know if this was geared towards me or towards you. So I will let you go first, and then I'll answer that after you.
I would say I would call it more of a personal brand. I think having a personal brand is extremely important. I started to build out my personal brand probably in around 2016. And I think I solidified it with the children's book, The Steam Queens, and everything like that. And I just started to really like separate my identity from the company that I worked for. Before then, I was like, I work for MasterCard. I'm this, I do this, I do that. And like, if people asked me for my elevator pitch, that would be all I talked about, because that was like my identity at the time. And then when I started to build out my personal brand to complement my work identity, I started to get more of a presence on social media. So I was, you know, doing interviews for the book. I was doing podcasts. I was talking about my personal and professional life. And to be honest, I think looking back, I wish I would have started that earlier in my career, but personal brands were not as important and they were not as common as they are now. If you're starting your career, or if you're senior, whatever, start today. Like, you need a personal brand because, like we talked about, like, I can talk about the Sting Queens and how I'm the project manager for all of that. I'm the marketer. I'm the creative director. I'm the brander. I'm all of that stuff for that company. And I can always pull that experience into my career to talk about those things that I've learned driving those companies and the success that we've had and the metrics that go along with it. And that demonstrates my ability to be a good project manager for one of these bigger companies. So start today. It doesn't matter if you're junior, senior, mid, whatever, you need a personal brand.
Yeah, man, you got to get to the yams.
Yeah. now you're going to have me singing that all day.
I was trying to figure out how it's going to get it.
Oh, I gotta
let Uncle Charlie cook real quick.
Right.
Are you finna sing?
No, I cannot sing. That's not one of my ministries.
I should have opened it up with this though, because people got bills to pay.
Yes, we got bills for sure.
But now for me, it started about 2 years ago. By this time, I had already been, if I'm close to 10 years now, so 2 years ago, maybe put me at like 8. So I was already in, and I had already been helping people. I was already a YouTuber with my boxing stuff. But I was like, I need to pivot to something that's going to be more beneficial to my time. And I had already liked helping people, so I did that. And then that's when I really started pushing for it, because I had already knew how to do a little bit of the stuff I did on LinkedIn earlier. So I just started, like, I just made a whole thread on Twitter, like, about how people can just start on YouTube. Like, I just started, it was consistent. I showed that I had knowledge and value to bring to my area of expertise. I always lift my LinkedIn up for people to go check out so they can actually see, like, I am who I say I am. I work with, like, people in the industry that other people know. So you can, like, not say, like, there's anything that's fugazi about my experience. And yeah, and I just figured out how am I going to say the same thing everybody else saying, but how am I going to put my own spin and my twist on it, right? Even, you know, I got a shout out to, I'm trying to see where you around when I was talking to, I'm Just Cyrus, Tech is a New Black. But I was telling him, I was like, I don't look at like none of y'all's like competition. I want to see like everybody eat. I was like, I look to like the Joe Buttons and the Norries and $1 million worth of game. I look to them not to competition, but that's what I look at. It's like, okay, how I'm gonna take this thing to the next level? How I'm gonna get you know my process, my setup? How am I gonna go from here to there? Like, that's what I look at. Like, everybody's in tech, especially all the black people. Like, I want us to win. Like, I'll shout them out anytime I can or their stuff, and that's kind of what I'm doing now. It's like, this thing is like, you know, eventually I plan to probably do a little bit more live streams. I may try to do some more, maybe just like some, if people want to submit their resumes, so you kind of review them on a live stream. Maybe some more women things, maybe some more men things, just to see that. Like, I've never really cared about numbers per se, because somebody 2 years from now is going to come back and watch this. And I'm like, oh my gosh, thank you for putting this up. You know, she was such a help and blah, blah, blah. And it kind of, that's what it's for. Like, I'm not like saying, hey, I need like 1,000 views or this or whatever. Like, I want y'all to click it so more people see it. But as far as like me just having all the views, I don't care. Like, the contents of this, like, as like I told somebody, Rick Ross said, the container with the most weight moves the slowest. So it's going to move. And that's what it's been doing, like, over this last. that stuck with me when he said that. But over the last couple of months, like, my page has like been growing like crazy. It's just because of the value and the stuff I do or what I commentate on. And that's kind of what I've been focusing on. But to answer this question, I made sure I had enough experience to where I could actually help people before I decided to talk about this. And like you were saying earlier, a lot of people that made the mistake of being in the game a year or two and now all of a sudden they a guru. With they hand, they ain't got enough skin in the game. It's just like what we see in sports. Head coaches, they ain't never been no head coach before. never coached nothing or doing bad, especially my Denver Broncos. Nathaniel Hackett is horrible. He needs to be fired. So that's definitely true. So Henry, I hope that answers your question. It's funny saying Henry because people be calling me Henry. But so let's get into these last couple of questions. What are three books you recommend and why? And they don't have to be tech related or anything. They can just be any type of books that, you know, you read.
Yeah. I did have to look back at this because I do a lot of Audible books. One is The Ghost in the Wires, and it's a cybersecurity book. But it's not like a stuffy, like, oh, this is all the cybersecurity terms. It's like a real world, like, story about the guy who, like, was the first cyber criminal and just how he got into it and how he continued to do it for so long. And it's basically teaches you about how simple social engineering is. He was basically hacking into systems and figuring out people's names that worked at certain places, like the phone companies. And he would, call them up and impersonate these people and give them certain information, and they would just trust it. And, it was just amazing some of the things that he was able to do with basic, like, telephone calls or sending letters and different things like that. And now he talks about, like, what he did and how he got caught and, you know, just how simple things were. So it really makes you look back and look at your job and say, okay, I can think that I'm this super smart person, but really I need to just be simple and think about the basics and go back to the basics and make sure I'm covering everything. So I really love that book. I highly recommend it. It's not a boring read, so that's cool. But it teaches you about, like, how simple cybersecurity really is. Another book that I read is called Hyper Focused. I think it's really timely because it kind of talks to you about how to cut out all the distractions and really focus at a higher level when you need to. And I think for me, working where I work, there are so many distractions that are always coming in, and we're taught to kind of prioritize everything and then to figure out how we focus on the right things. But this book really taught me how to, like, cut out the white noise and how to think at a higher level and to focus at a different level by cutting out some distractions, and give you techniques to do that. I don't know what the third one I had was, but I also read a lot of books about fashion and style. So I'm
that's
reading,
cool. I mean,
yeah, let me pull
you
up.
You want to get my Joe Budden on one day?
I'm reading Andre Leon Talley's life story. And basically he was, like, the first editor, African-American editor at large for Vogue. Black man. He recently passed away. But he kind of has rubbed elbows with anybody you can think of in fashion, and was, like, in the streets of Paris, like, helping build these fashion houses. And he was a Black man. So for me, that's really cool to me. Like, I don't want to just own a Chanel bag. I want to kind of understand the history and make sure I'm supporting brands that, you know, have this legacy and the right legacy. So the more I kind of learn about, like, what my personal style is, I want to know the history of it too. So I'm reading that book too.
Got you. Great. So what's one question you wish I'd ask you, and how would you have answered?
I wish you would have asked maybe something not so glamorous, like, what keeps me up at night, which I feel like is such a cliche story, but
does keep you up at night then?
Yeah, I think. And I would say why I want to be asked this question is because I think so many people do glorify the beauty of, you know, careers and life. And there are people that probably are still sitting on the line thinking, like, well, she's just different, or she doesn't deal with the things that I deal with. But it's not true. And it's because we don't talk about it as much. Mm-hmm. I think the question I would ask is, like, okay, what keeps me up at night? For Black people, like, this year has been so rough for me and my family and just life. Like, so many people in my family have passed. There was recently a mass shooting in St. Louis at a school, Central Visual Performing Arts. And it, I mean, it just hit so close to home. And then you see mass shootings in like Colorado now at the Q Lounge and all these places. And then just like I live in St. Louis, so it's huge, big gun, a lot of gun violence and stuff, just a lot of stuff that you deal with as a community. And I think being in like being Black in this space, it's been interesting that, and we don't talk about it as much, but there are so many layers to us. Like I'm supposed to, you know, deal with friends or family that are impacted by certain things and get up and go to work tomorrow and be a regular human and like separate right. all those things. But, and I think like Black people just have a different complexity of life that we have to deal with. And I feel like we should spend more time talking about like how to be a human and balancing just being a good person, being a well-rounded person, a sound person, like having a strong mental health and balancing your career. Because for us, it is just a different level.
Yeah, you are right, though. Because I mean, in videos, I've had different episodes where I talk about some of the same things about like how people could see you as being successful, but not knowing that you may be the person in your family that take care of everybody.
Yeah.
So you may not even be able to get where you really want to be because unfortunately you got to take care of people. It's one of the things like, you know, I told it back because it was that tweet that said like $100,000 for Black people is not the same as $100,000 for white people. And, you know, no. It's not, you know, you have, like you said, complexities, it is different. I remember trying to buy a house back in 2015. I don't know why I tried to buy a house in 2015, but I remember, you know, I want to say it was my realtor or the lady helping me out, the credit union. He's like, you know, you ain't got nobody you can ask for, like, you know, the money for the
$20,000,
right? Because you, white people, oh yeah, you know, my grandparents, they gave us, you know, $60,000, $100,000 for the house and closing costs, or they bought us a house for our wedding present. How many Black people you didn't hear say that? Like, you know, we starting out, you know, clawing our way back up and have to work so hard. And I think it is one of the hardest things, like even for me, like to even be transparent, like, right, I fight a lot of times of saying, okay, how do I balance like my family life with my kids and my lady? How do I try to get them more time? Yeah. Or do I, like, I know in my heart of hearts, hey, if I ain't have nobody here, I could probably be two times ahead of where I am. It's like, and I see as me also being a creator and a cybersecurity professional, I see why artists will probably have kids, will probably just be single or whatever, or not really, or just wait till stuff die down for them, like later on in their career where they try to do family. Cause it's like, it's hard. Like, you know, when you don't have nobody, like the times I know when I didn't have kids, I could stay up all night. I could do whatever when I wanted to. I could go work on something. If I didn't want to go make a move, I go do. You can't do all that now. Mm-hmm. And it's tough.
And you feel guilty. I mean, I can't think of how many life things have happened. My family and I've been traveling for work, or, you know, yes, I was away, you know, when they were going through something and I had to catch a flight to get back to them, or, you know what I mean? And I don't have children. So for me, it's different. Like you missing recitals and you know what I'm saying? Or eventually you might do those things because Black professionals that are, and not even just tech professionals, like Black doctors, Black lawyers, when you're like leading something and you're the first to enter that space, there's a lot of pressure on you to do it so well and to not have excuses and to not step away from unnecessary things and to prioritize the right things. And while sometimes it may be okay to step away, we know we don't have the same luxuries to do it as often as we need to. And so I think that keeps me up at night. Like, how do I still be available and prioritize my health, my mental health, and prioritize just life and balancing the things that are happening as I'm getting older and life is just, you know, doing different things, and still show up and do my damn job at a high level so that I can carry Black people in this space to make sure that the next door that's open for somebody Black, they don't come with this bias because of how I perform.
Definitely. And then like, what was I thinking about very briefly? It was also about, hey, I really should have touched on this when you was talking about how the inherent bias of like at MasterCard with them really not having people who probably shop the most in the room making some of these decisions, how it, you know, affected policies and things that you guys pushed out. We see the same things of when it comes to diversity, all these companies want to be diverse, but when you look to the top, you can't see nobody that look like you. And that's apparent with some of the policies that they do. Some things are unfair, where some people, like the person don't have to come into office, but you're making them come into office anyway. When, you know, especially if you have a person that's a single parent or a black single mom or whoever, it's more beneficial for them to have a flexible job, to not have to come into office where they can go get the kid from daycare or school, whatever they want to do. But because you are so archaic in your thinking, you want them to come in just because you want them to come in because you decide to spend all this money on a building that people don't even want to go to.
Right. And I think it's kind of like a catch 22 because it's like we've done it for 2 years because of nobody's fault. And we were able to do it at a high level and get the work
very
done.
Successful people.
But now you're saying we can't do it.
Because right. It's like, I got to sleep. I got to go sleep early. Then I got to wake up, wash my face, take a bath, get in the car, be in school with traffic. It pretty much lose probably 2 hours of productivity when I could have been asleep, rolled out of bed, joined the first stand up, and then did my work.
Yeah.
Like, it is a lot. And I think it's like our generation is the one, I think, like, I hate to say this, but I think like our parents and them or their generation, they kind of was just, a lot of them was kind of like just placeholders. They wasn't like, they kind of was going with the flow. You see us where we're making our own rules. We're deciding, I'm not finna be unhappy for this. I'm finna go for what's owed for me. Because a lot of times you just kind of talk, just be happy you had a job. I'm like, man, no, they happy they got me. They making 5 or 10 times off me what they paying me. So nothing. I'm gonna look out for my best interest anyway. Because I remember I used to tell my mom all the time, like she had to understand. And one of the things about being transparent is like, hey, you may be the first person in corporate America. I'm the first. I know my mom's side, I was the first grandson to graduate high school and go through college and graduate.
Yeah.
So, and then all these people weren't necessarily working in corporate America, right? I think my uncle was, he rubbed some shoulders with some people. He's actually, I think that's the one I think I was telling you that's in St. Louis. So he knows some things, but for the most part, a lot of those people don't. So especially my mom, I come from a blue collar family. She never worked in corporate at the time. So when I used to tell her years ago about, nah, I just got here, but shoot, this company talking about this. I'm like, I ain't leaving no money on the table. Nah, companies want to see loyalty. I was like, no, they don't. They don't want to see no loyalty no more. The days of working somewhere 20 years is over. Like, it just is. There's no union. All these places are at will. They can decide what type of severance they want to give you. I'm like, just take care of yourself. Get as much money as you can in the beginning. Like, I even told somebody the other day on Twitter, I was like, hey, look, I don't care when you start the new job. Don't quit the other one yet. Like, work a couple and get some extra checks and shit. If some go south, at least you straight, because
and you might have to determine if you like it. You know, you might have to determine if it's the old bait and switch and maybe it's different from what they told you it was going to be. Or if, you know, it's really a good fit for you. So, you know, everybody's circumstances are different. And I just think, you know, while there's this huge, there's so much visibility on the space because of the great things, I think we also need to talk about the other things that are important so that when people do decide to switch, we keep people here because they understand what they're getting into and they have resources and support to make sure that they know they're not the only ones.
Okay. And it's dope. I don't want to take up all your Saturday. Can you tell our listeners and our viewers where they can find you at?
Yeah. So I am on... I just deleted my Twitter because, you know, I know it's like such a controversy thing right now, but Elon Musk fired all the principal security engineers and I don't want my information being in no breach.
Hey, but I feel like we're going to get that class action lawsuit.
Probably. But I did deactivate my Twitter, so I'm not on Twitter right now. Maybe one day, you know, in the future. But I'm on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, as my name, and Facebook. So Brene Washington, Brenae Washington is on the screen. And you can pretty much find me that way. I'm also on LinkedIn. And then I just started a blog called Tech Pays for Slays. So I'm getting more active over there. And that's kind of where I just want to talk about like my personal journey, just be real with people, talk about the struggles that I deal with in tech, how I've overcome some things, and just talk about like how it helps to shape the life that I live today.
Nice. Are you going to make some of like them tech pay stuff for like for some men? You know, I would love to wear some, but I don't want to be slaying.
I know my friend Joseph, he was telling me I need to make some tech pays for the drip or something for men. So, I mean, I'm going to have to get with y'all.
I know for the I would definitely rock that because look, earlier in this this live stream, somebody said, did y'all plan to wear all black? I was like, no, actually. I just threw black on because I had bought this hat in Vegas, so I had been wanting to wear it on episodes. So I was like, I'm going to wear it now. Yeah. But no, I appreciate everybody for tuning in. This has been a huge success. It's making me actually want to switch to just going live instead of pre-recording because I don't have to worry about editing all the time and I could just be done with this right now. But I appreciate y'all. If y'all want to support the channel, please join the Patreon. Right now, my ebook is currently on sale for free. Use code HELP. Use code HELP at checkout to get my ebook for free at textualconsulting.com/digital products. And also, if you want to do a consultation or get your resume redone, entry level, mid level, senior level, my Calendly link is in the description. You can click on that and I can get you right before Q4 ends. But like I always like to say, let's stay textual and we out. See y'all later. All right, we ended the broadcast. Let's see.